This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, a week from tomorrow is Thanksgiving, a day that has long been marked as a time to come together to give thanks for the bounty of the harvest. It is also a time when we gather together around the table to enjoy one another's company. How many of us will travel long distances to be with family and friends? Well, the coming together of people around the table, albeit in smaller, less formal gatherings, is important year-round. 20 minutes a day, time spent sharing a meal, having dinner together, offers big dividends for the health and well-being of families. Shared play, also good for us, and we all know the value of a good night's sleep. Our guest this afternoon is Barbara Fees. She is the director of the Family Resiliency Center at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, a pioneer in the field of the study of family routines and rituals. Her latest book is Family Routines and Rituals. Professor Fees joins us this afternoon to talk about everyday opportunities we have to care for one another, to enjoy one another's company, and what happens when we take advantage of these opportunities. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments. Join us with your stories of family routines and rituals. We look forward to hearing from you this afternoon. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Barbara Fees is the Pampered Chef Limited Endowed Chair in Family Resiliency, Professor and Director of the Family Resiliency Center at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Prior to her arrival at the U of I, she served as Professor and Chair of the Department of Psychiatry at Syracuse University. She was at Syracuse from 2000 to 2008. Again, listeners, we invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, your stories about family routines and rituals. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Barbara Fees, so good to have you in the studio.
Thank you for the invitation.
My pleasure. Well, tell us a little bit about the Family Resiliency Center. What kind of work is done there? What are the interests of the faculty and staff?
Well, it's a very exciting place that tries to connect families and community around the theme of positive development, health, and well-being. We take a very deliberate approach to trying to look at the positive things that families can do to promote health and well-being for their children and also across the life course.
Hmm. When did you begin your interest, your study of family rituals and routines?
Actually, I've been doing this for close to 20 years. At the time, as a young assistant professor, I was looking for different ways to really capture how the whole family works together. So much of the work at the time that I started was focused just on, you know, dyads, mothers and their children primarily. And I was looking for a way that we could sort of pull the whole family together to include siblings, to include fathers, to include grandmothers, aunts that were raising their children. And the way to do that was to look at how people sort of organize their daily lives as a group. And that, of course, led me to mealtimes as one of those special gatherings.
Well, now here I have a couple of basic questions. What is a family? That's a good question.
Yeah.
And it's a big one. And then what are family rituals and routines? How do they differ?
Well, first question,
yeah.
What is a family? Our group has taken the strategy to let families define what makes up a family for them. And that's really sort of a changing target because, as we know, families sort of, they're created, they dissolve, they reorganize themselves over time, either through marriage, through divorce, through loss. And sometimes even neighbors can become a member of your family. I know that in some of our observations of mealtimes, I'll look at a mealtime and I go, who are these people? I say, oh, well, this is, you know, this is the little kid down the street, but he has dinner with us, you know, probably six times a week. And in essence, he really becomes a member of the family as well.
Yeah. I remember in college, I actually for a time had a wonderful group of roommates and we functioned as a family, sharing meals quite often and also getting together. We were from completely different disciplines, but getting together and going out to the park, going out to the lake and And it was interesting because some of us were better in the kitchen than others. So eventually what happened is we all came together in the kitchen and did it together. So now to rituals and routines.
Well, we do make a distinction between the two. A routine is something that is predictable. It's something that occurs over time. It typically happens in the same place. Sometimes it happens at the same time. And it's something that is instrumental. It's something that you get things done. Whereas a ritual is something that is much more symbolic. It's something that holds meaning. It's something that is usually tied to some fairly strong emotions. So I may have a routine of stopping at home, stopping on my way home to pick up a gallon of milk. And the routine may involve my husband calling to remind me to pick up that gallon of milk. And I may see the same person at the grocery store. But I probably don't have a close personal relationship with that person. But the ritual is when I get home at night, and there's sort of that sigh, sort of that pause, and there might be some jokes that we tell around the table. It may be a recipe that's been passed down across generations, and it's that emotional connection, that symbolism, that really reflects the ritual.
Yeah. Now, have you always had that within your family?
Well, actually, I have. I mean, it's probably no surprise that people study those things that are meaningful to them. And so dinner time was a very important part of my experience growing up.
Yeah, and you've continued it.
I've continued it. I have one son who's now a young adult. And even through those adolescent days of where there's the eye rolling and like, oh, do we have to? It was an important part of our life. And now it's become an important part of his life as a young adult.
So establishing these things with your children then leads them to carry on.
Well, this was another reason that I became very interested in it, is that so much of what we know about health and well-being suggests that practices are passed down across generations. And there's fairly strong evidence that the poor outcomes such as depression, alcoholism, even schizophrenia is passed down across generations. But we knew less about, well, what are some of the positive things that are passed down across generations? And so that's why I took the attitude of looking at how routines and rituals may be one of the ways in which we pass down positive aspects of family life.
Yeah, and the family meal together, in particular dinner, I would imagine, is the meal most often where everybody is available. Sometimes it's tough, but dinner time, that's an important ritual. What do children, adults, and the family group as a group gain from this time together? What's going on that's good for us?
Right. Well, there are a couple of different ways to look at it. There are epidemiological reports that involve several thousand people across the country that have looked at just the sheer frequency of time that people spend together. So we know that families that spend approximately four times a week eating together, that their adolescents are less likely to abuse alcohol, they're less likely to smoke marijuana, they're less likely to actually smoke tobacco, and they're more likely to do better in school. And the reason that this may be the case is that it probably is just a proxy or a marker for monitoring kids' behavior, because you're just checking in. You're seeing what's going on in their lives, and you're keeping track. So even though these mealtimes tend to last only 18 to 20 minutes, it's a powerful way to organize very, very busy lives for most families.
Yeah. What do children say about having dinner together? How do they, because they're checking in on the other folks at the table, right?
Right. Well, that really sort of depends on the age of the child, and it depends on what their sort of felt experience is during the mealtime. So younger children of, you know, from preschool up through grade school years, they look forward to things that are predictable, They look forward to things that tend to be, let's say, I don't want to say calm because it's not always calm,
yeah.
But things that provide them with that sort of sense of belonging and their ability to have a voice at the table. So being able to talk about things that are important to them, provide them reassurance that they are important. I think I mentioned earlier about with teens and my own personal experience with, you know, sort of that eye-rolling phase, like, oh, do I have to? And I know that parents with teens probably can resonate to this as like, you know, pulling your kids, you know, to do this or to do that. But it's still an important phase to say, I'm there for you. And you might sit through some quiet mealtimes, but it's that consistency that plays out. And national surveys actually say that both for teens and for parents, one of the things that they indicate is that they wish they could find ways to spend more time, not less time, with each other. So even though there may be, you know, the eye rolling and the grumbling, when you sit down and talk with teens and parents and even younger kids, there's still a desire to spend more time with each other, not less.
Yeah, I would imagine that being together and breaking bread together, as we say, a really powerful metaphor, is a way to be safe and secure as well.
And that's part of the protection of a ritual, is that it allows you to have that safe containment. And so there's the possibility of, you know, if things start getting a little bit too hot, you can sort of look to somebody else in the group and say, you know, hey, maybe it's time for a joke, or let's ease the tension down a little bit. You know, one of the advice that I give to parents is that, you know, first of all, these are gatherings. This is not a good time to have your marital spat. This is not a good time to go over the finances of the household. This is not a time to bring out, you know, the long laundry list of complaints. This is a time for easy conversations. This is a time to focus on, you know, sort of the events of the day, of what's going on, what happened on the bus, what happened on the neighbor in the neighborhood, who got a new puppy. And sometimes you'll find out that things sort of slip out that maybe you want to follow up with later. But it's not a time, you know, for real intense emotions.
Yeah.
It's a time to let down.
Although at the same time, it's got to be a way to reinforce again that feeling of security. Mm-hmm. And so that once we have this ritual established, when the times get tough,
mm-hmm.
We're here for one another. Mm-hmm. So in a time where we're having economic setbacks, mm-hmm. or somebody is very ill,
mm-hmm.
it's got to be an important mm-hmm. fallback position.
Right, and I think you framed it just the right way. It's a safe place. So if you know that it's a place that you can go to in times of need, and if you are troubled by something and that you know that there's a group that's going to respond to you in a positive way and you're not going to be, you know, rejected or harmed, then that's a place that you can bring concerns to.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is Professor Barbara Fees. She's the director of the Family Resiliency Center at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She's a pioneer in the field of the study of family routines and rituals. Her latest book is Family Routines and Rituals, and that's what we're talking about here this afternoon. We're talking about the everyday opportunities we have to care for one another, to enjoy one another's company, and what happens when we take advantage of these opportunities. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon, become part of the conversation here on the Afternoon Magazine. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, why 20 minutes? Why not 15, or why not 40?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, that's an average.
Okay.
So that's the average amount of time that families spend. Interestingly enough, the range is somewhere between 2 and 47 minutes.
2 minutes?
2 minutes. And this is pretty consistent across several studies now, you know, conducted in different parts of the country. So, you know, there's some families that it's, you know, catch as catch can, and other families that maybe do have those long, drawn-out candelabra meals. There are not very many of them, but there are some that last quite a long time.
Yeah. Those folks with two-minute meals, are they, even though the time is really short, is just that 2 minutes together doing something?
Well, we don't have any really hard and fast data on that. I think that the essential ingredients of a positive meal have to do with communication. And so it's difficult to understand how much you can really communicate in 2 minutes. I think probably that 18-minute rule, you know, not like that 30-second rule of what you drop on the floor, but that 18-minute rule is probably how much time you need to sort of check in and see what's going on and sort of process what's going on in the day. And that may vary by, you know, either what's going on, if there are any difficult topics that need to be discussed, or maybe it's just an uneventful kind of day. But that seems to hold true for most of the families that we've looked at.
The two-minute dinner, the text message dinner, right?
Oh, wow. Don't get me started on that.
Well, maybe you mentioned this, have mentioned this already, but how many families come together and spend some time together, some meaningful time together having dinner on a daily basis,
well,
or 4 times a week?
Right. Well, the surveys tend to indicate that a little over half of families with children from anywhere from about 5 to 14 years of age spend between 3 and 4 times a week together. It's a little bit more for younger kids and a little bit less for families with teenagers.
Mm. Are these families that are coming together, are they from all kinds of backgrounds, all kinds of economic means?
Yep, they're from all kinds of backgrounds, all kinds of economic means. It's a little bit more difficult for some lower-income families, but that's not always the case. What tends to get in the way is longer work hours and juggling work and transportation costs. People that that do shift work, it's more difficult to juggle, you know, work time and with family time, and that's a real concern for a lot of families.
Yeah, and then when you get into the older years with children, they have activities and outside interests,
right,
as
right.
well.
And that's what parents report, is that the number one concern that they have is trying to juggle schedules. And this is not something that kids report as much, but parents report that the biggest stress that they feel is trying to juggle schedules, you know, their work schedule, their home schedule, and their kids' schedules.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I think we might have a call coming in, and I don't want to launch into another area of my interest before we get to this listener. So again, let me reintroduce our guest, Barbara Fees, director of the Family Resiliency Center at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She is the author, most recently, of Family Routines and Rituals. Let's take a call now on line one. I understand there's someone calling in on a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I guess my question would be, in your study, how does a family with a mother, father in it, and both of them have jobs outside of the home, how does that work with these this 20 minutes, and vice versa, where the mother is at home, who's a housewife? What does the number suggest there? Are there more positives with one or the other?
Well, that's a really good question. What our studies have shown and other researchers across the country is that the distinguishing features may not be whether it's both parents working or not. It may have to do more with the number of hours that parents are working and what some of their transportation needs are. So parents that are working longer hours and then have to juggle different transportation needs, either through commuting time or having to juggle public transportation where it's more difficult to get between home and work, those are the parents that experience the most stress around organizing their daily routines, including family meal times. So it's not just a matter of whether both parents are working or not. It's the amount of work stress that they experience in relation to organizing their home routines.
So it's a Go ahead.
It would seem to me, one of the comments you made earlier is that with your situation, that it's something that through training, you know, for lack of a better word, tradition, to me, it you have to start that when the kids are young and bring it forward. But to start that when, say, they're age 10 and just about to hit puberty, and becoming teenagers, because generally teenagers, let's face it, I was like that myself. We're kind of self-absorbed, but it just seems to me it should be, you know, started at a young age, so that I think it's a lot smoother. It would just suggest to me, but maybe your studies say something different.
No, that's a good observation. I think it's easier if these practices start when children are younger. And the research that we've done indicates that probably that timing is around when children are around preschool age. It's a little more difficult, you know, during when kids are infants. You know, the main thing you're focusing on is getting them to establish some regular sleep habits, just getting them to eat. And so to establish more regular sort of big group routines and rituals, that doesn't really kick in until kids are, you know, probably in that 3 to 4 year old range. And then you start out kind of small. You start out not with probably 20-minute meals. You're talking probably 10 to 12 minute and you start out. But I think you have the right observation. The earlier you start, then the more it becomes a part of their daily life.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions, comments are invited this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. What are your family rituals, and how do you make it happen? If we want to make this happen, where do we start? How does it begin?
Well, a lot of these routines and rituals are embedded in practices that people experienced when they were growing up. And some of these were positive. Some of them are things that people want to avoid in their current life. So, you know, we're coming up on the holidays, and one of the things that I advise families to do is to identify three things that they're really looking forward to. And three things that they really dread. And we all have them.
Yeah.
So, and it's important to recognize that we all have them. And it may surprise you if you sit down with your family and share the things that you're really looking forward to and those things that you're really dreading, and find out that the things that you're looking forward to are probably the simpler things, and the things that you dread are probably the more complicated things. And if you find that the simple things that everybody are looking forward to, you want to preserve, whereas it's those dreaded obligations, that people may be willing to give some of those things up. And if they're not, then find somebody else to do the work, and then lighten the load just a little bit.
Scale back a little bit. I know one of the things that you're interested in is family storytelling.
Yes.
So how can we And who doesn't like a good story?
Right.
So how can we build on that? Because I would think that that would be one of the things that would be in a list of three things that we want to do, is we want to gather together and talk about great stories, whether they're, you know, things that happened in years gone by or just yesterday.
Right. And these ritual gatherings are often a very good setting for family storytelling. A lot of it happens just naturally. If you cue your ear to upcoming gatherings, you'll find that a lot of the stories that are told either around the table or at the gatherings are told year after year. And, you know, sometimes people say, oh, no, not this story again. But it's a way to introduce new members to the family.
Yeah.
It's a time to reflect, you know, sometimes about people who are no longer there. And it's a way for younger generations to really learn about the history and the identity of the family. So sometimes it can actually be a good way for younger kids in the family to learn more about the older generation. And with all the great little recording devices that we have now on cell phones and, you know, different, you know, MP3 players or whatever, you know, it might be a good project for kids, you know, as they're getting bored through these long holiday gatherings, you know, to get some storytelling going.
Okay, let's take another call. This is a listener in Mackinac, Illinois, in Tazewell County on line one. Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. I'd like to go back to the gentleman who was concerned about when to start these family dinners. And while 3 or 4 years old might be the ideal, I would think that it wouldn't be too late to start at 10 or 15 or whatever age the child is, and especially if they're entering that stage where they become totally self-absorbed, that it might be valuable to remind them that there are other people in the world besides themselves by sitting around a dinner table and talking. I'll take off the air.
Okay. Thanks for your call this afternoon.
I think that's a good point. When, you know, in talking with teenagers in particular, I think it's we want to let teenagers be able to have their voice as well. And this is a good place for them to be able to do it. And not all teenagers are self-absorbed, and they often, you know, if you pull them aside, they often want to be there and they want to engage. And if the table can be a safe place, you might find some surprises in what they have to tell you.
Yeah. I want to thank the listener for her call this afternoon. Here may be one of the ways we could make it happen is to have everybody has a role to play in terms of getting dinner to the table, whether it's preparing the table or helping with the marketing or, you know, or clearing the table. It's a shared activity, and we share the work as well as the benefits.
Absolutely, and this is a good way to get everyone involved. It also is a good way to teach responsibilities to children and to get them involved in the whole process. And this can start at a very early age. It can start around menu planning. It can start around assigning roles of, you know, getting plates on the table. You can use plastic plates for young kids, and, you know, clearing the table. And as children get older, then they can become more involved in meal preparation, and then having a say about what they want to eat as well. And then they learn more about food choices. They learn more about planning and budgeting, which becomes more important. So when they're clamoring for some of those more expensive products in the grocery store, then they can see exactly how much they cost and how they fit into the family budget.
Speaking about making choices of food, the messages that we have about food are some are good, some not. There's the good, the bad, and the ugly. What do you see out there on the horizon in terms of those messages, commercial and non-commercial, about food?
Well, there is considerable concern about targeted food advertising to children under the age of 8. I think that if you look at the number of food commercials on television and now on the web that link energy-dense products specifically to children. The evidence is pretty clear that this has detrimental health benefits to children, particularly in terms of the increasing rates of obesity. And children are exposed to well over 40,000 commercials of targeted food advertising a year. And when you think about children spending 5.5 hours a day in front of some screen, then the opportunities to be exposed to foods that may not promote health and well-being is drastically increased. Now, there's really nothing wrong with advertising. There's really nothing wrong with marketing. The people who do this work are incredibly smart and creative. The issue is that for children under the age of 8, they're unable to make the cognitive distinction between Shrek on a bag of Twinkies and Shrek as their friend. And so when they ask for this product, they're really asking for Shrek. They're not asking for the Twinkie. And what happens is that a dynamic sets up so that they're really clamoring for these products, and their parents feel like they really have very little control, either in the grocery store or in when it comes home to their counters. And they feel at a loss in terms of what to do. So, you know, one of the legislative policy issues has been to ask the Federal Trade Commission to restrict targeted food advertising to children 10 and below so that it doesn't put parents in the awkward position to have to make these distinctions when their children are unable to really distinguish between, you know, Shrek and the Twinkie.
Yeah. Boy, is there any way around that situation when that child is not able, not media literate, and, you know, and parents have to have broad shoulders and say, nope. But that's easier said than done.
It's easier said than done. One simple solution is to turn off the television while you're eating, so that you're not exposed to some of the marketing advertisements while you're eating, because it does actually show it influences how much you eat during a meal.
Really?
So this is a simple solution for that 20 minutes. And it's not too early to have those conversations with your children about making healthy choices for foods. It's a difficult conversation for younger children to understand. And I think that parents should just be aware that it's a hard issue for young children to understand and to be able to educate them about healthy food choices from an earlier age.
Yeah. Does it make a difference where this table is, or that we are at a table? Should we be away from the television? Should we be away from the computer?
Well, we should be away from the television. We should be away from the computer. We should turn off the cell phones. And the reason for this is that it interrupts communication. So if you're talking on the cell phone or you're watching television, it prevents that opportunity to really engage with each other. So while in a recent report by the Center for Disease Control, for parents who admit having a television in the area where they eat, and close to half of families have a television in the area where they eat, the reason that parents report having the television on is to reduce conflict at the table. Mm-hmm. And this is understandable if you're tired, if you're stressed out from work, if you sort of lost the practice of gathering around the table. It is a distraction. So one of the things to consider is how can you start building these routines back again in a healthy way that promotes more open communication.
Mm. Maybe we go back to that idea of three things you want to do and three things you don't want
right.
to do.
Right.
Yeah. Now, the ritual of that shared dinner, does that also help us prepare for what lies ahead through the rest of the evening and into making preparation to go to bed?
Possibly. The studies that we've looked at, they are somewhat related. However, we do find that bedtime routines for particularly younger children are incredibly important because sleep is so important. And, you know, brain scientists will tell us how important this is for brain health and how important restorative sleep is for our daily functioning. And some of the studies that we have looked at and conducted is that it's important to keep those regular bedtime routines so that children sleep through the night. But we've also found that if there are added stresses during the day, if parents are feeling hassled, if they've had to change their plans, if they're feeling a little stressed out, then it's more likely that those routines get disrupted. And we know that everybody experiences that mm-hmm. at some time. So the challenge is to regroup and not let that happen every single night and to anticipate when you might be a little more stressed and try to preserve some of those routines rather than make it a habit of being stressed out all the time.
Yeah. Let's take another call. A listener on line one in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Is that me?
Yep, that's you.
Okay. I raised my two youngest children as a single parent, and for six of those years I worked out of town either in Decatur or Danville, so I was pretty tired when I got home. So what I did was really simplify the meals. Sometimes we had breakfast cereal with milk and fruit, and sometimes we had applesauce and cottage cheese with maybe bread. And sometimes we had a hamburger stew, which was I would heat the ground beef in the skillet and add some mixed vegetables, either from the can or frozen. But the meals were very simple. And there had been a lot of conflict around the dinner table before my divorce. So I found by reducing my stress in preparing the meal, we could have a much more enjoyable meal.
I think this is just a really lovely example of setting priorities and recognizing that what you're trying to preserve is the time together and not focusing on, you know, the elaborateness of you know, preparing the meal. I mean, for some people, that's not something that they look forward to. But for other people, it's like, you know, I just need the time to let down. I want to get fed. I want the kids, you know, to be happy. And then we're thinking about bedtime and to keep those priorities straight. And I think that's just a wonderful example.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah, when I was a kid, that was actually sometimes that was really fun to have something, you know, like cereal and fruit or scrambled eggs.
Right. I remember
dinner.
Scrambled eggs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the things I want to talk with you a little bit about before we run out of time, and let me reintroduce you. Our guest this afternoon is Barbara Fees. She's the director of the Family Resiliency Center at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's a pioneer in the field of the study of family routines and rituals. Before coming to the U of I, she served as professor and chair of the Department of Psychiatry at Syracuse University. She was there from 2000 to 2008. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, your family stories, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, we talked maybe about a month ago or so, and one of the things we talked very briefly about, it was a much shorter interview, was evening routine and ritual. And one of the things that you said that I found really fascinating was the link between family routines and rituals in promoting medical well-being. And you said that there might be some connection between healthy sleep habits in the home and asthma.
Right. We've been involved in a study for the last 8 years with 215 families who have a child with persistent asthma, which means that they are required to take medicine twice a day. They're also at risk for waking in the middle of the night if their asthma is not well controlled. They're also at risk for developing sort of anxiety-related kinds of symptoms. And they're also at risk for developing obesity. And the reason that we got interested in this particular condition is that it's the number one chronic health condition for school-age children. It's also incredibly expensive to treat. And it involves a lot of daily routines to manage it. You need to remember to take your medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You need to communicate regularly with healthcare providers. And you need to have some bedtime routines. And so in our study, we conducted a fair amount of interviews with parents about their experiences, their daily experiences. We conducted mealtime observations, and then we conducted a series of telephone daily diaries to find out about bedtime routines. And a couple of the key findings were that we found that the children's lung functioning, the severity of their lung functioning, was indeed related to the amount of anxiety symptoms that they were experiencing, which other people have reported. But those symptoms could actually be reduced by the amount of genuine concern that was experienced or expressed during a mealtime. So families that showed this genuine concern that we've been talking about during a regular family mealtime actually protected their children from developing these anxiety-related symptoms when their children were experienced these increased severity in lung functioning. We also found that the regularity of routines in the household, particularly around bedtime, was related to sleeping through the night. And the odds ratios or the likelihood of this happening was equivalent to previously published reports of biological sensitivity, such as responses to ragweed, cockroaches, and other biological markers that other people have predicted. So what we think we're capturing here is sort of the family climate of taking care of a child with a chronic health condition that is equivalent in strength to the biological climate that other people have reported.
We're here at the end of the time we can spend together today. Before we go, though, I want to talk with you. One of the topics that comes up in programs that I do throughout the year, it seems when we're talking about diet and nutrition, we're talking about kids and how well or not so good they do in school, is movement. And recess is like gone the way of the dinosaur in schools, and also the lunch period seems to get shorter and shorter. So what can you tell us about routine and ritual in the school building where children spend so much of their lives?
Well, there are programs that are trying to connect homes and schools together to reinforce the importance of physical activity and to make that a priority for schools and for families, and also for children to have safe routes to school and to reinforce the importance of even just being able to walk to school and to ride your bike to school. And in order to do that, we need safe neighborhoods and safe routes to school.
Yeah. And recess, do you think it'll come back now that we're worried about so much about kids and weight?
Well, hopefully it will. And if we can decrease the amount of attention that's being spent on testing and a little more equal attention to health, then healthier children do better on tests.
Yeah, boy. You know, just thinking about a test, it makes me want to go out and jump rope or something before or after, or maybe both. You know, it's like, whew, I got to calm down here. So, well, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon, Barbara.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Barbara Fees, she is the director of the Family Resiliency Center at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and she is the author most recently of Family Routines and Rituals.